China's telecom equipment giant Huawei is laying off workers from its U.S. subsidiary FutureWay, and one employee told Reuters the target was to remove 70% of the 850 staffers. The layoffs come about 2 months after the U.S. government put Huawei on a trade blacklist, making it illegal for its U.S. subsidiary to transfer any sensitive technologies to its parent in China.
T-Mobile and Sprint finally received the okay from the Justice Department on their $26 billion marriage. The approval Friday paves the way for a merger between America's third and fourth largest wireless companies behind Verizon and AT&T. A group of U.S. state attorneys general have filed a lawsuit to block the deal, claiming it will take $4.5 billion out of consumer pockets annually. Consumer advocates fear the deal will lead to higher consumer prices by reducing major competition.
More protests in Hong Kong Sunday as authorities stepped up security around the city. These crowds are angry over what many see as an increased cycle of violence against them. On Saturday, protesters defied a police ban and marched against last weekend's violent mob attack by suspected Triad gang members. That protest ended in violent clashes as riot police waded in to disperse crowds.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's July 29th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. And another business day and business week getting underway. Lots going on in the world. We'll keep you up to date on as much of it as possible as we can moving through this hour, the 5 o'clock hour, including the latest intel from the world of business. We'll get to some of those numbers momentarily. Today on the program, Facebook and the City Colleges of Chicago joining forces to offer a new digital marketing course. We'll tell you about this new synergy coming up this morning. Dr. Ignacio Lopez will be with us momentarily from the City Colleges of Chicago. He's president at Harold Washington College, and Dr. Lopez will be in our first segment this morning. A little bit later on this morning, Ferrara redesigning and reconcocting candy recipes. We will talk to one of the reporters at the Chicago Tribune who's been covering this. It will mean a little bit of difference for the Butterfinger and some other candies as well. We will talk with one of the reporters again covering that a little bit later this morning. Alexia Ruiz will be with us from the Chicago Tribune at about 5:38 this morning for that story, so stay with us. Let's get to the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, where the opening bell rings on Wall Street this morning as strong earnings reports from tech companies and better-than-expected economic growth fueling markets late in the week. Will it continue into this week? We'll find out, I guess, today. The gross domestic product was up 2.1% for the second quarter. That's down from 3.1% in the last quarter. Analysts expected to see growth of only 1.8%, so the 2.1% reading on Friday was good. Strong earnings reports from the tech sector sent the S&P 500 and NASDAQ to new record closes on Friday. Shares of Alphabet jumped more than 10% after Google's parent company exceeded analyst expectations for second quarter earnings. And Twitter shares gained more than 9%. Starbucks gained more than 9% after crushing estimates of same-store sales. At the closing bell, the Dow was up nearly 51 points. The S&P was up about 22. The NASDAQ was up about 92. This morning, futures are pointing toward a weak open on Wall Street. Dow futures are down just fractionally this morning. S&P and NASDAQ futures are right there with the Dow, heading to the opening bell at 8:30 Chicago time. In London, markets are mixed. Europe markets are mixed, with London higher by nearly 1% this morning. The FTSE up nearly 78 points. In Germany, though, and France, off by nearly 0.25%. And in Asia, markets are in the red as well. The Nikkei finishing the day up down nearly 42 points, off 0.25%. In Hong Kong, down nearly 291 points, off nearly 1%. In China, off just fractionally. And oil is trading at $56.25 a barrel, which is up about 5 cents. A couple of stories as we begin this morning. U.S. and Chinese trade negotiators resumed trade talks this week in an effort to end the year-long trade war. Trump administration negotiators are flying into China today for the first of five face-to-face talks since the two nations declared a truce at last month's G20 summit. Many analysts don't expect much progress from the two-day talks. Government officials, business leaders are hoping the two sides can at least agree on so-called goodwill gestures and lay a groundwork for future negotiations. A study published in Bitwise casting doubt on the legitimacy of Bitcoin trading. It found up to 95% of the trading of the cryptocurrency is faked by unregulated exchanges. Bitwise is an asset manager that is applying to the Securities and Exchange Commission to establish the first ever Bitcoin exchange traded fund. It submitted the study as part of its application process. The study found that nearly all the volume on 71 of 81 exchanges that were looked at were one person buying and selling simultaneously to create an appearance of activity in the market. The exchanges reported an aggregated $6 billion in average daily Bitcoin volume. The true volume, according to the study, is $273 million. Let's begin this morning front and center with a new synergy between Facebook and the City Colleges of Chicago. We're happy to have with us this morning Dr. Ignacio Lopez, who's the president of Harold Washington College of the City Colleges of Chicago. Dr. Lopez, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
We want to have a conversation this morning about the really cool digital marketing effort that's underway with Facebook at City Colleges of Chicago, at Harold Washington. But I want people to sort of get to know you a little bit more. Tell us about, you're the president of Harold Washington. Talk to us about the job you do.
Sure, yeah. So thanks again for having me. So I've been president of the college now 2 years. I'm entering my third year, actually. Prior to that, I was with National Lewis University as their vice provost. Prior to that, I was actually a teacher with the Chicago Public Schools and engaging with research in the city of Chicago and across the country around, supporting our students, minority students, access to education. And so really finding this path a very rewarding and just an honor to serve as the college president, feeling like I have gone full circle from classroom teacher all the way to college president, mm-hmm. right? Originally, from Chicago. I was born in Puerto Rico, but raised here in the city in the Humboldt Park neighborhood. And so just really connected to Chicago and supporting our students.
What are the biggest issues that you see on your desk daily and in your daily work? Is it, you mentioned access to education, but is it what, affordability, access to classes, those kinds of things? What, tell us about that.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing today, college and affordability, right, within just the college space in general, not just here in Illinois, but across the country, understanding, access in terms of paths to being enrolling in colleges, but also the ability to pay for college, right? How do I pay for college, right? Students are saying they feel like it's becoming more and more expensive. It's harder to make life decisions on whether to, take time to invest in paying for the school and or just, going right into the jobs. And I think what we're trying to do with the city colleges is to find that right marriage or the right bridge between, hey, how do we put you in situations where you can earn and learn, right? So that you're able to do well for yourself, build wealth for yourself and your family and your community, but also still learn so that you have those paths to employment, careers, or transferring to your dream school.
There have been a lot of conversations nationally lately about free college, paying off student debt. Those are big conversations right now. How do you feel about each of one of those? Should college be free to kids who want to go?
I think absolutely. I'm of the mindset that if we find a way to create a system that is affording the opportunity for students who really are struggling, college should be free. The City College of Chicago has launched its Star Scholarship Program, where students in the City of Chicago, CPS, with a 3.0 GPA or better can come to any one of the city colleges under the Star Scholarship. And in addition to that, those students are also provided, resources and wraparound services so that they're able to be retained and to transfer successfully. A lot of those, first-time freshmen that are struggling financially who are Star Scholars, many universities across the state of Illinois are starting to step up and say, hey, we recognize this kind of affordability issue. We recognize that, City Colleges is now offering the Star Scholarship. How do we partner with you, right? So we have over 20 universities across the state now that are saying we totally want to help your students. And so how do we become a bridge so that they'll get 2 years for free and then they can come to us, whether it's, National Lewis or mm-hmm. DePaul or U of I, et cetera, UIC, they're able to then transfer to one of these schools and also receive some other additional scholarships as Star Scholars.
And that program is an interesting one because it's sort of a win-win. You have, first of all, you have students who might not necessarily be in the whole college arena, right? That get exposed to it. Right. And then also the track to perhaps go on.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely right. So one of the, that's really interesting because some of the students are saying, well, again, going back to this earn and learn idea. So they're saying they're, you know, trying to come of age, trying to figure themselves out, whether this transfer thing that they want to do or whether it's really like this career thing that they want to kind of get into right away. And that's been one of the other interesting struggles is how do you create curriculum that's backwards mapped to what our industry, what our business professionals are asking for. Mm-hmm. And what we always say here at Washington is, listen, we're right in the heart of one of the biggest cities in the world, right? We would be foolish to not take advantage of, you know, working with local businesses such as Aon or United or, you know, Walgreens, mm-hmm. You know, the work that we're doing now with the Goodman Theater and Joffrey, et cetera. So, like, great. So we know that these are the big struggles and questions that our students are having. We know that employers have these demands or needs for these skills, bringing these two pieces together all in a way that's affordable to the student and really making an impact on businesses here just in Chicago.
People always ask if we're going to do free college or pay off student debt, how do we pay for it? As somebody who works inside of the system, what do you think the answer to that question is?
Well, that's a good question. There are ways to think critically about how businesses and philanthropy also support this work, right? So there's real conversations to engage with our donors and funders around the impact that this has on the life of an individual and their family and community. And so there's a space there that we have to kind of get real around in terms of how do you begin to afford this. The other piece is, okay, how do you think about the overall financial structure of tuition as revenue for the institution, right? Are there other ways in which the institution can bring in revenue to support these other sorts of innovations? And so, you know, you'll see institutions that, right, we've got some really great spaces. If you look at Malcolm X, if you look at Olive Harvey, you look at what Daly is doing, right? These are really great spaces that we can also leverage for other supports, bringing people in, you know, do rental agreement with facilities and really think about ourselves in a broader way so that the portfolio of revenue for us as a college is more than just tuition and taxes and state funding. So we're looking at what are these other lanes, if you will, of revenue for the institution.
You mentioned earlier working with some of the big corporations, companies that are based here in Chicago. What part of the what role do they play? Because they have some pretty deep pockets, some of the companies. They're also hurting for employees that are trained properly. Yep. What's their role?
Yeah, so just big partner with Aon. Just hats off to Aon and the amazing work that they've started with the Chicago Apprenticeship Network and really driving this in the city of Chicago as leaders to not only look at ways to support and build wealth, but also think about diversifying their talent pipelines as well, right? So we know in the city of Chicago, we have very diverse students that we all serve within the city colleges. And so looking at us as a pipeline for that minority talent is really key. But if you look at folks like Aon and some of these other large institutions, they're actually paying the salary for some of the students. So if you are able to move into our apprenticeship program at Harold with Aon, Aon actually pays your salary. Now, we have this really great conversation often with Aon around what are these deep skills that need to be aligned with, you know, if you're an insurance analyst or if you're in IT or if you're in another part of the business, whether it be marketing, digital marketing, et cetera, that we now know like real time what these companies are struggling with. And they work with us and our faculty right at the table to design, to tweak, to redesign kind of the curriculum so that there's a quicker path to those skills. And so, you know, these big businesses play a really big role in helping us as colleges and institutions think critically about those skills.
The apprenticeship part of this is really interesting because in places, and you've talked about the success, but in places where these apprenticeship programs work, I'm talking about there are a couple places in the suburb. I think Harper College is one of them that has some success. There are people lined up to get into these programs.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yep. And I think one of the cool things that Harper has done, and I know the city of Chicago and our chancellor is a big advocate of this, and other leaders in the district are really thinking about how do we take this to scale, right? How do we begin to think about partnerships with the Department of Labor? Or how do we think about hosting conversations with businesses that say, hey, what could apprenticeships look like in the financial technology sector and finance in general and IT and cyber and cybersecurity and all these other areas? But it's one of those things where we need help, right? We need to organize around, you know, CIOs that are doing this work or CFOs that are doing this work. And so we need those folks at the table to help us kind of think critically about this. And I think there's really positive movement. The city of Chicago is really moving in the direction, and we hope to keep tapping into the business sector and the knowledge expertise that exists here.
Well, one of those partnerships is the impetus for having our conversation today and bringing you in. This deal with Facebook, working with Facebook to have a digital marketing program underway. Talk to us about this and where this idea came
from. Yeah, this is huge because it was one of those things, I think, you get a call. I don't mean to be too personal here, but I was my kid plays baseball, and we were in a travel baseball game. This was a couple years ago, and I get a phone call, and it's a leader from Facebook, and I'm trying to watch my kid's game, but also trying to talk to Facebook, and they're saying, hey, we got a really cool opportunity. Is there a time that we can meet and chat? Obviously I can't talk now because my kid's up to bat, but we wanted to have this kind of deeper conversation that really started with what the market trends are. If you look at just in the Midwest alone, if you look at Illinois and in Chicago, the number of jobs that are asking employees to have skills and talent around digital marketing, web analytics, right? Those various sorts of kind of the marketing skills and talent, mm-hmm. right? And so that's where it started. And Facebook has this really great approach nationally, working with 20 other community colleges across the country. And they selected us as a partner as well to say, hey, we've seen what you all are doing with this apprenticeship work. I think that there's an opportunity to align this with you in the city of Chicago and kind of scale this. So long story short, we work closely with Facebook. We brought in our faculty. We looked at the current digital marketing curriculum that we have. And instead of creating this longer 2-year sort of program, we said, what can we do within 24 weeks? How do you front load skills? So instead of burying like skills or courses that will give you these really deep skills, you kind of learn these skills at the very end of the course or program. How do you flip that and say, we want to give you the skills to do this right off the bat within the first 6 weeks, 10 weeks, 24 weeks. And so the program is launching now. It's a Facebook digital marketing program. It really is open to everybody, right? So the program is open to especially, small businesses, big businesses that are looking at scaling up their employees to really leverage social media and social media marketing as well. As a way to kind of grow an audience, grow a base, grow revenue, et cetera.
And that's a really good example of having Facebook working hand in hand with you.
Yes.
Or a company working hand in hand.
Absolutely, yes. And so they've been great. I mean, from the beginning to end, right? We talk about from the onset conversation when I was on the baseball field with my kid, all the way through the course development, and then now to the launch of it, we had the big Facebook Boost event not too long ago, and we're able to reach out to small businesses. And then we host those small businesses at the college to kind of teach them more about what the program is.
Do programs and initiatives like that, when you see the success of them, do they give you ideas for other things? What other ideas do you have?
Oh, yeah. So we are starting to look closely at financial technology, right? This fintech space is becoming very, very interesting. How we're looking at, cryptocurrency, how you're looking at cyber, how you're looking at IT, and how that begins to evolve or support companies that are looking to evolve and really kind of stay with the time, knowing that there's so much more competition out there, so many more, businesses and organizations, both, locally, nationally, globally, right? So we're looking very closely to partner and grow in these other areas.
Yeah. The idea of somebody who's already in their career being able to go back and get something like this is sort of appealing, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. So if you feel like you've engaged and have been doing some marketing work, but feel like kind of out of touch with some of the new Facebook manager ads, things like that, mm-hmm. Why not go back and get tooled up, right? So the program that we offer with Facebook is 24 weeks long. It's a $1,500 program. However, we are offering scholarships thanks to Facebook, right? So be able to move more employees through continuing education programs such as this.
I like the cryptocurrency because I'm still trying to get my head around cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
it would be great to go back to school, learn exactly what it is.
And yeah.
What,
yeah. Yeah. What yeah. Like. I struggle with it too. So my doctorate degree is in psychology, so I can walk you through, you know, learning and development, but my, we have expert faculty and partnering with leaders in the field that know this, who can come in and kind of run circles around us, if you will, to get this stuff off the ground.
It's interesting. The psychology of it is part of the cryptocurrency equation, because part of me thinks, well, I don't understand it. It must not be good.
Right. Yeah.
And that's psychology, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's fear, right? Because I don't understand. So Facebook's now looking at, like, what is their new currency? We're hearing a lot about this kind of push and pull of where Facebook is going to land and having their own currency. That is, you know, could scare a lot of people and or really excites a lot of people. And so how do we bring this together and really kind of think through, to your point, the psychology of this, but then move towards, all right, what are the actual programs and next steps to get folks the knowledge they need to really engage and do this work?
As I was preparing for your visit today, I was looking back on your resume. And one of the things I thought was interesting was the work that you used to do in the inner city with kids.
Yeah.
How much of that helped prepare you to be president of Harold Washington?
I think so much of it did. You know, when I was a classroom teacher and we saw students that were just not engaged, or students who knew how to play the system to be, you know, they wanted to get dropped down. In some instances, students were just not engaged to the point where they felt they could, oh, I could get X number of detentions. I can get so many suspensions and eventually they'll expel me. And that's what they wanted in some of these cases, right? And so, you know, you think to yourself, how do we prevent that? How do we create engagement? How do you create clarity and path for students so that they see themselves successful? And I think that that's what we're trying to do at Harold Washington and the city colleges in general, right? To be able to say, you know, we've got you, right? We know that we don't all come from the same kind of circumstances in our lives. We may come from various neighborhoods, but we certainly want to be able to put you on these paths for success. The other big influence for me is we can't assume that the interventions or wraparound services or supports are always working. So we have to be constantly monitoring those interventions. And so for me, the analytics and the data are important. I think any business, any CEO, any sort of leader, executive director, et cetera, knows that the monitoring the key metrics are really important. For us, monitoring metrics that are really getting us insight into early intervention or early alerts for our students, especially some of our minority students that are coming from different spaces in the community that may still struggle with whether it's reading or writing or to the psychology of it, just like this sense of, like, I don't know if I even belong here. And so something happens negatively in the college, and then they're like, you see, this is validation that I don't belong here. So, like, how do you get to those points of interest sooner than later? And then how do you create those early interventions so everybody feels welcomed, everyone feels engaged, and everyone sees themselves successful in the future?
I often hear how lucky Chicago is to have the community college system. How unique is it for a big city like Chicago to have a community college system like this?
I think it's a blessing. It's absolutely a blessing. And the ability to now partner so much more closely with the Chicago Public Schools has been just great. Our chancellor and Dr. Janice Jackson are doing some amazing work together. The mayor has been so supportive of our work and collaboration together. But getting very deep into what are these kind of CPS, CCC roadmaps within the city of Chicago so that there is no stigma to community college. I think that, you know, just in my opinion, oftentimes we look at the nation may not understand community colleges, or we may not know exactly what they do. And so there's some demystifying that always has to happen to be able to say, you know, community colleges aren't your just last resort option. They should actually be a really positive first choice for you, especially knowing that we can give you 2 years for free. We can give you earn and learn experience, and we can get you to your dream school sooner than later. And you can get some scholarships to go to those schools. But that sort of narrative often isn't told. And so we struggle with how do you get this message very deep into the city of Chicago so that folks know the city colleges are really, really a gem and a blessing to help to grow and to connect our students.
How do you gauge the success of what you're doing? For the students, it's a report card, right? What goes into the report card for Harold Washington?
Sure, yeah. So, I mean, if you're looking at it from a business perspective, right, every business looks at sort of like the broader metrics around enrollment and revenue and all that. I think all those are important. Our heart and soul of what we do at the City Colleges is really based on student success, right? Are they being retained? Are they transferring? Are students feeling like they were able to come to the City Colleges? They got what they needed to get, whether it was that transfer course for a nursing program, or whether it was a certification that they needed to kind of school up, or whether it was a path to transfer. And so we really look closely at both those retention metrics and those transfer metrics, and really the student success metrics that capture who our students are and the success that they're having.
Where would you like to see the college in a year, 2 years, 5 years?
We were just talking about this yesterday, right? How do we continue for Harold Washington College to be, right, the City College of Chicago? We talk about our business excellence, right? We serve around business and professional services. We have a portfolio of programs that ranges beyond business as well. But how does Harold Washington College look at leveraging the Loop as its campus? So you start to see, we now run dance programming inside the Joffrey Ballet. So our students were saying, we want dance. You don't have a dance studio. We said, hey, Joffrey's a great partner. Thanks to the Joffrey. We have five sections of dance running. So Goodman Theater, we want IT and all the jobs behind the camera, right? Because we always get this running joke within the Loop and the theater district saying, well, oh, we got a lot of colleges that want to put their students on stage. And what we were saying was, no, give us all the jobs behind the stage, right? The sales director, the marketing director, the IT people. And so how do we start to get into those spaces? And so in the next, 3 to 5 years, that's a big goal for us. How do we start to see Harold Washington and the other city colleges really being part of the fabric of the communities and neighborhoods that they're serving, and really finding this innovation for continuing around apprentice program, the work-based learning, the earn and learn, and all of those areas in the next 3 to 5 years.
Well, Dr. Lopez, it's great meeting you. It sounds like you got something going on here.
Yeah, thank you.
And
thank you.
Please keep us up to date on it, and we'd love to have you back.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. This is great.
Dr. Ignacio Lopez, president of Harold Washington College in Chicago, City Colleges of Chicago. You can find more online and a link to Harold Washington at ccc.edu. That's ccc.edu. We'll have more of our conversation with Dr. Lopez after the bell this morning. We'll post that in the podcast of The Opening Bell at WGNradio.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. Some well-known candy and snack brands are being rebooted by Oakbrook Terrace-based Ferrara Candy Company. Among them, the Butterfinger candy bar. To talk more about some of the reporting she's done on this story, Alexia Elizalde Ruiz is with us, the food industry reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Alexia, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I love the lead in your story, by the way, on this. After years of declining sales, it was time to lay a finger on Butterfinger. Love that.
Thank you. I was actually really, really proud of it, so I appreciate that you noticed.
Yeah. So what's going on? I think, when people who love their Butterfingers may be a little concerned about a different recipe. I know the package is a new look, but what's happening with it?
Yeah, so after Ferrero Group, which is an Italian company, purchased Nestle's U.S. confectionery business last year, which included the likes of Butterfinger and Baby Ruth and Nerds, they merged it with Ferrara Candy, which is a local company. They decided to kind of, address sales issues with some of their brands, including Butterfinger. So Butterfinger had seen like sales declines in the double digits previously, and so they rebooted the recipe, which you're right will have has some people concerned. And what they did was they removed a preservative called TBHQ, which is a controversial one, but that's not what has people concerned. They changed the chocolatey coating formula to be kind of it's a different refinement process. They added more cocoa and more milk. And then they changed the kind of that orange interior that is the, calling card of the Butterfinger. They changed the formula for that as well. And so So yeah, so they kind of just rebooted the recipe to kind of reflect, you know, I guess to make it kind of less tacky, you know, that you know, kind of sticky, mm-hmm. And a bit crispier, and also make the give the chocolate a better mouthfeel. And then, as you said, they changed the packaging and did more marketing.
Yeah, because that always reminds me of you know, whenever I've eaten a Butterfinger in the past, it was the, you know, stick to your teeth, you have to kind of pick it off kind of situation. Is what are people who are Butterfinger aficionados most upset about, though?
Well, the people who have, you know, taken to Twitter to complain about it are just saying that it's gross, right? Like, it just doesn't taste like it used to, and so they just don't like it. There hasn't been a lot of descriptors beyond that. So I think these are candies that people grew up with, so they're very used to how they taste, and when they taste different, people don't like it anymore. So that, like, stickiness, like, stick to your teeth thing, even though, like, I personally am not a big fan of that, other people who are accustomed to it, you know, will miss it. And so people just think it tastes kind of funky, you know, like the you should Google, you know, bring back Butterfinger, not Google, sorry, like search for it on Twitter, search for that social, for that handle,
for that hashtag,
there are some pretty funny descriptions about it.
Yeah, I've seen some of the comments, and, you know, I just, you know, there are lots of different comments, but you're right, there's a hashtag and a movement developing. We've kind of seen this story before, haven't we, Alexia, where a company changes the recipe for something and people lose their minds. And sometimes they're forced to go back. Is there, what is the early success or not here for Ferrara and Butterfinger?
Yeah, so far so good as far as sales go. They are up significantly since they introduced the recipe. So they are declaring this as a success, and they said, you know, you can always expect some people to be upset about it, but that as a whole, it has been a good thing for the brand.
Yeah, and when you have double-digit sales losses on something, it's you kind of have to do something. How has this impacted the local plant here? Do they make it in Franklin Park, right?
Yeah, exactly. So Nestle made it in Franklin Park in their factory there, and Ferrara took over that plant. You know, they obviously continue to make it there. You know, I visited the plant, and everyone I spoke with says, you know, even though... Well, I didn't visit that plant, excuse me. I visited the plant in Itasca where they make Nerds and Gobstoppers and things like that. And there, and what I presume is the same case in Franklin Park, is they say things haven't changed much, you know, besides some of these formulation and packaging things. Like, it's still the same people, it's still the same culture, you know, it's still the same, you know, factory and processes. It's just kind of different owners, but everyone seems to be, say things are pretty stable.
When you look at the website and you see all of the different brands that are there at Ferrara, there's some real legacy brands. I mean, in addition to Butterfinger, you've got Baby Ruth, Raisinets, Crunch, the 100 Grand, Chunky, O. Henry, all of these legacy brands. And as you point out in your story, people sometimes, or most of the time, eat candy because of sort of a nostalgia aspect. So from that angle, you know, Ferrara is kind of playing with fire, aren't they?
Yeah, you could say that they're playing with fire, or you could say that they're reminding people what they love. So yes, you're absolutely right that nostalgia is probably one of the key reasons people buy candy, and they always say their favorite candy is the one that they grew up with. So absolutely, when you mess with a recipe, you are risking alienating some people. But as one analyst I spoke with said, you know, some people might have forgotten about, you know, their candy, and then they see it pop in the candy aisle, because so many purchases are impulse buys that, you know, if you suddenly catches your attention, you're like, oh yeah, I love Nerds, you know, and then you pick it up even though you haven't had it in decades.
Yeah, and I guess the other side of this coin is we've seen a lot of different brands go away, just completely go away because they failed and nobody's been there to scoop them up. So that's the other part of the story, isn't it? The potential of losing some of these nostalgia brands.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine a world without Crunch or Butterfinger or Baby Ruth. But certainly, you know, if you lack of investment can lead to, you know, enough of a sales decline that they do go away. So it looks like, you know, this is not going to happen with these brands at this point.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit about what else is happening with Ferrara and Ferrero Group. They've recently purchased Kellogg's cookies, and I was surprised. I didn't realize that they had the Keebler brands as well inside of their cadre of brands.
Yeah, so Ferrero Group, which again, not to be confused with Ferrara Candy, which is local, has been on this buying spree the last few years. So they make Nutella. That's kind of what they're very famous for. But in the last few years, they purchased Ferrara Candy. They purchased Fannie Mae. They purchased the Nestle's U.S. confectionery business. And just this year, they purchased several of Kellogg's businesses, including its cookies, like Keebler and famous Amos. And so Ferrero Group is just trying to muscle into the U.S. market through these acquisitions. And it has worked. They are now the second largest candy company in the world. So they leapfrogged over Mondelez, which makes Oreos and Cadbury, a couple years ago. And so they're saying that now, so the Kellogg acquisition of, you know, Keebler and some Pie Crust and other things like that should close this week, I think, and they plan to apply their same approach to revamping kind of languishing brands to those acquisitions as well. So we'll see what happens, if anything, to the products. It could also be just a marketing tweak.
We're very fortunate in the Chicago area to have this wonderful competition going on between these companies, candy companies. You mentioned Mondelez, but of course, Mars Wrigley Confectionery is still here. And they're the leader, according to your story. Is that who perhaps Ferrero Group has in their sights?
It may be. They're very far away from it. So Mars Wrigley has like $18 billion in global sales, and Ferrero Group is at about 12.4. So they're by far the leader, but, you know, who knows? it could happen. Ferrero Group was very small, was not in the top five just a few years ago. So they haven't explicitly stated that they're trying to be number one. That's not their goal. They're just trying to make acquisitions that make sense in the moment. It definitely looks like they're trying to be a dominant player.
And are they planning to keep all of the, legacy brand names? Like, for instance, will they maintain the Nestle logo? Will they maintain some of these other brand names? Or do you foresee other changes coming from a naming and branding standpoint?
I think the Nestle logo, as I understand, will go away and be replaced by the Ferrara logo, but the names of the brands, Crunch, Butterfinger, Raisinets, et cetera, that won't change. That would be terribly confusing to customers and be very counterproductive to their goal, I'm sure. So it's officially, now these are Ferrara brands, so they're going to be Ferrara branded, but they will keep the names that people know.
All right, very good. Well, Alexia, we appreciate you being on with us this morning and sharing your reporting with us. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Alexia Elejalde Ruiz, a food industry reporter at the Chicago Tribune. We're going to link out to her story on this and keep you posted on how things in the candy world are shaking out.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a weak open on Wall Street this morning. Dow futures are off 6 points. NASDAQ futures are off nearly 7. S&P futures off just 2 points. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. It's going to be a busy week for Wall Street and agricultural trade. Beginning tomorrow, the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee begins its monthly meeting. Will they raise interest rates or will they lower interest rates? And also beginning tomorrow in Shanghai, the trade negotiators for the U.S. and China will meet face-to-face for the first time in a couple of months to take a look at what's happening, if anything, with that trade agreement. In the Chinese media yesterday, the story said the United States has shipped several million tons of soybeans to China since the two countries' leaders met in June. However, U.S. government data shows that the volume was much less. China has made inquiries to U.S. suppliers for the purchase of soybeans, cotton, pork, sorghum, and other agricultural products since July 19th, and some sales have been made. But our parties at the U.S. Department of Agriculture say not as large as what China is reporting. Meanwhile, on this side of the Pacific, we ended the day Friday at the Board of Trade with the grain markets showing slight declines in wheat, corn, and soybeans, and livestock futures ending higher in lean hogs, live cattle, and feeder cattle contracts. The Illinois Farm Bureau will be holding an event Tuesday, July 30th through the 31st at the Bloomington Normal Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. It will be the 2019 Farm Income and Innovation Conference. That's coming up later this week. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. A couple more stories here before we leave you this morning. Former Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen says she supports a 25 basis point cut in the federal interest rate as the global economy weakens and inflation in the United States is lower. The former Fed chair said at an Aspen Economic Strategy Group meeting in Colorado last night, the global economy has weakened. In her words, I think partly it's weakened because of conflicts over trade and the uncertainty that's caused for businesses. The U.S. Central Bank widely expected to cut interest rates by a quarter of a point on Wednesday for the first time in nearly a decade. United Airlines says today that it is taking an equity stake in Clear, a technology company that uses fingerprints and iris scans to verify a traveler's identity and security checks. Clear operates at 31 airports, in addition to stadiums, arenas, some Hertz Global Holdings rental car locations. United's investment will help Clear expand into some of the airline's largest hubs. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, July the 29th, it's a quiet day for economic reports. We will see the Dallas Fed Manufacturing Survey today on the earnings calendar. Beyond Meat, Snack Foods, J&J Snack Foods, Dish Network Corporation, all reporting quarterly earnings today. For the rest of the week, personal income and spending for June will be out tomorrow, along with the Case-Shiller home price report for May, and June's pending home sales are due out as well. The Federal Reserve begins its interest rate meeting tomorrow and will wrap up on Wednesday with a decision on interest rates. Private sector job numbers for June will also be released on Wednesday. June construction spending figures are due Thursday, and Friday brings the Labor Department's jobs and unemployment report. This week on the earnings calendar, Mondelez International tomorrow, Molson Coors on Wednesday, General Motors, Duncan, Kraft Heinz on Thursday, and then on Friday, Exxon, Chevron, and Berkshire Hathaway. Just some of the things that could move the markets through the week and today, this Monday, July the 29th.